This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Mike Somich on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, Mike Somich, I'm Patrick Maher, VSiN, the sports betting network. A little different this week as we are, Mike, a week and 3 days out from Super Bowl 60, which we'll get to. We've got a lot to do on the program in a short amount of time. We're going to go through, you and I love betting hockey, love betting the NHL. We'll tell you how to do it and why you should be doing it. Mike is a horse racing expert, and we do have somebody on that Derby trail that's not going to be on the Derby trail. We'll get to that coming up in just a bit. Also, as far as the props in the Super Bowl, who's getting hit, who's not, and our favorite. I guess we're going to go through some of our memories in betting the Super Bowl, those that stand out. If you've been betting long enough, the losses will stand out much more paramount. They will reign supreme, Mike Somich, over the wins, but we're going to go through some of our memories here.
Yeah, it's funny because our producer, Michael Cohen's like, hey, what are your biggest Super Bowl wins, Super Bowl losses? The losses one, boom, immediately to my head. Right away, I'm like, I know which one that is. The wins, I'm like, well, hold on. Let me hit Wikipedia up and remember all these Super Bowls because exactly. I can remember which ones went really well for me. But yeah, it's funny as a gambler, you always remember the bad beats. You don't remember the good ones. I guarantee it does even out. But man, do the bad beats stick with you?
Well, the losses are easy to remember because I just remember walking by myself home from the party I had attended. Yeah. And then if I had won, I would generally stick around, but I would walk home solemnly after the losses. So those are easy to remember.
Yeah, it's the betting walk of shame, right? No matter where you are, if it's in Vegas and you're walking back to your hotel room after a crap session or after being at the sports book, or you're walking home after a party, man, you remember those walks. You just wallowing in your own misery as you go back to wherever you're heading home.
And go have another cocktail. All right, let's jump into 60, which is a week and 3 days out. So a couple of things. We wrote down some of the biggest props, including Drake May, those rushing numbers, which we'll get to. They have jumped up. That's a good job there. We wrote down JSN on Sunday's program and others, including Kenneth Walker. So we'll see where those stand. But let's get to the numbers quickly here. So we have settled in at 4.5, Mike. 4.5. Pinnacle Offshore is showing 5. There are plenty of 5s. South Point 5, but those 5.5s have disappeared. And your public book, your DraftKings, and of course your FanDuel are sitting 4.5 right now.
Yeah, I think this is where we're going to sit for a while, right? Not a key number here at 4.5. If we get down to 4, I think you get immediate Seattle love. If I think we get to 6, I think you're going to see some buyback on New England. But I think we're going to settle here in between this 4.5, 5.5 number. I still like Seattle. Bet 3.5 right on open when we were live on Sunday night. Yep. So I've got a 3.5 in the account. I actually I dabbled in a little more Seattle, Patrick. I took some Seattle minus 14.5 plus 350. I think there is a real tail here to where Seattle wins by margin. And if that is the case, I want to try and capitalize on some of those alt numbers. So I played a little minus 7.5, but I played 14.5, minus 14.5 plus 350 on the Seahawks as well. The more I dive into this, I just don't see where the advantage is for the New England Patriots. Like, I'm not sure how they're going to successfully be able to throw the football, how they're successfully going to be able to run the football. And you flip it to the other side, I think their run defense is going to be able to hold up. I'm not sure how well they're going to be able to hold up in pass defense against this Seattle team. And so I think there's a world where we're going to see a blowout here on Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, I'm right there. You and I both, I jumped on the 3.5 on Sunday. Also, listen, we should focus on the total a little bit here because obviously we know the Seahawks allowed the fewest points per at about 17, and the Pats were 2 at 17.3. Now, you have to factor in the Patriots schedule, which we understand. But if you want to look at EPA, success rate, DVOA, these were two teams that were awesome defensively. And that brings me to 46.5 open, 45.5 right now. I did bet the 46.5. I have no problem betting the 45.5 under.
I haven't dabbled in the total yet. I don't disagree with that. Especially like, look, if I think Seattle's going to win by margin, the under becomes more and more attractive, especially the second half under, if we get to that
totally.
Point, because I think it's going to be tough for New England to be able to throw the football in must-pass situations. When Seattle's able to rush with 4 and drop back and cover with 7, and I think they do get pressure with 4, all of a sudden, the route to success on the offensive side becomes very difficult. We know Drake May loves to take sacks. He was one of the NFL leaders in sacks this year. That offensive line's doing him no help. Let's just be honest. Not Drake May's fault. But that means that you're going to face third and long, second and long situations where this defense able to really scheme it up. And you give Mike McDonald 2 weeks to come up with a defensive game plan. It's going to be a game plan tailored around this New England Patriots team. It's what he's done in 1 week for all of his opponents. And we've really only seen one team able to burn them. That's the Rams. As much as you've got, as I love Drake May, he's not Matthew Stafford. As much as you like Diggs, it's not Puka Nacua and Davante Adams out there. This is not talentless, but a significantly less talented offensive team than what they just faced in the Rams. And the only team that's really been able to move in the Rams. So I just, the more I look at this, the more I think that this is a Seattle team able to get ahead early and then able to just kind of slowly take their foot off the gas and allow and force this New England team to come back on the offensive side. I think that's going to be a struggle.
Yeah, totally. But if you care, it's 6-4 to the under over the last 10 Super Bowls. This one in a vacuum, I think you nailed it. As far as, first off, we should back up a little bit. You know, so much nitpicking about McVay, and McVay didn't have his greatest postseason, but they did score 27 on this Seattle defense. If you go back to, and I understand the injuries, but if you go back to Shanahan, who's a genius offensively, that's what people tell me. He had 3 games against the Seahawks this year. In total, he scored 26 points. So McVay puts up 27. I expect it to be more along the lines of what San Francisco was looking at with the Seattle defense with New England than what the Rams and an exceptional play caller in offense were looking at as far as Seattle. That's an aberration. Yes, Seattle's given up points throughout the year, but they've certainly gotten more stingy as we've gotten closer to the Super Bowl.
And on the McVay point, I don't think it's been a game planning issue or even a play calling issue. It has been a game management issue where we have seen from McVay.
Should
have gone
correct.
For two, tried to make
correct.
It a 3-point game. Like, it's those type of in-game decisions, not the play-to-play in my mind
correct.
From McVay here, outside of that first half against the Bears where run the football, bro. But, you know, other than that, I think McVay is, you know, he schemed it up well. He just would have wished he would have made a couple different decisions in that Seahawks game.
Yeah, it's just my way of saying I have a hard time thinking New England's going to get to 27 on this defense. And like you said, if Seattle does create a cushion, that second half could be laborious.
It really could. And the one thing I do like here, and we've mentioned the one thing I want to say positive about this specific New England team, when they are healthy on defense, they are very good at stopping the run. So if you like Seattle in a run out, if you do think Seattle is successful offensively, that means it probably goes through Sam Darnold. We talked about betting props and specifically certain players that are going to be pushed up the closer we get to game time. I took Darnold over 229.5 passing yards in this spot. I think the offense goes through Sam Darnold and his arm. It means he's probably a likely guy for MVP if you want to dabble in that market as well. So I took over 229.5 on Darnold, and I parlayed Darnold over 229.5 with 2+ touchdown passes as well. You can get that just short of +200 available right now. I expect that 229.5 is closer to 240 come game time, and I expect that parlay is closer to +150 than the +187 I think it is right now. So to me, I wanted to get those bets in early because I do think those are going to go up, especially with what we've seen in the Kenneth Walker market.
Yeah, the MVPs, listen, it's mostly going to be a quarterback. I think out of we probably had about 34, 35 that have been quarterbacks thus far in the Super Bowls. So like you said, even if JSN goes off like he did against the Rams defense, you're still going to have the 3 touchdowns in the yardage to Darnold, and they're always going to lean that way in that market. Just checking ahead to the weather, you're not going to get a very accurate forecast. Listen, it's Santa Clara, California. We're looking all week, mid-60s, sunny, shouldn't be an issue.
No, hopefully we everything hold. I'm just glad we're not on the East Coast. Let's put it that way, because that would be a lot more confusing than we're currently getting on the West Coast. It looks like it's going to be nice. You mentioned it. We're still 10 days out, so anything can change. But we're not going to get a snow game like we got in Denver. We're going to get good playing conditions. And I think that benefits Seattle, to be honest with you, because I do think that helps their offense.
Yep. And we'll have more on that next Sharp Money. Download Sharp Money wherever you get your podcast. We do appreciate you. Let's go to 2 props for today in particular. One that's jumped. We said write it down on Sunday's broadcast. Drake May, essentially an opener of 30 on the rush yards. And you tell me people are hammering the over here.
Yeah, you're already seeing numbers as high as 37.5, 38.5 in market. That is a wild move. 33% yardage move in 3 days. And we talked about why this was going to be such a popular prop. Look, everybody has seen Drake May use his legs, specifically in the opening round and then in the AFC conference game. It was all about Drake May's legs and the fact that he ran one in and that he iced the game on that naked bootleg. That's something that was going to catch people's eye. We knew this one was going to get bet up. I'm not sure I like the over, to be honest with you. I do think Seattle is going to specifically game plan to take away Drake May's legs. But it was one of those props where if you wanted to bet it, you wanted to bet it early. And we've already seen that almost 30% move inside a market from that 29.5 number all the way up to 37.5, 38.5. I think this goes higher. I think this ends up closing in the low 40s. If you want the under, I think you wait and you take it the Friday before the game, the Saturday before the game, before you get a big syndicate move when the limits really go up.
Yeah, I think people are reading right now as well, May with the shoulder potential injury, maybe a concerted game plan to run the football, not just maybe more calls on runs to May. I think the injury is going to be fine. He has to go on the injury report, but the shoulder is barking a little bit. And we saw he's not just a good runner. He's a guy that's going to run on his own. We saw what happened against Denver to seal the game with he and McDaniel say, we're going on this boot by yourself because we do trust your legs that much. He was exemplary against the Chargers. He was great, like you mentioned, in the championship game with the three big runs. He's been tremendous with his legs.
He has, but we did see him get slowed down by Houston. And I think that's what Mike McDonald's going to watch. He's going to say, hey, look, we can actually replicate what Houston does pretty well. We can get home with our front four, and we can figure out how to play a defense behind him that doesn't allow Drake May to just take off inside the pocket. That's where the majority of his yards come from. We're talking about, you know, the touchdown run was a designed run. The bootleg was a designed run by him and his coordinator. The scrambles are what actually gets you up to that total, is when he takes off and gets a 20-yard chunk, a 30-yard chunk. I think Seattle is specifically going to game plan to try and take that away from Drake May in the passing game and force him to utilize, you know, a lackluster group of receivers to try and beat them.
Yep, 4 rushes for 10 yards against Houston for May, and now it's jumped up to 38. That is a big jump, as you mentioned. Let's talk about the one that's getting hit to the under right now, another runner, a lead back on Seattle. Kenneth Walker has been bet to the under. I believe it opened 78.5 here.
It did. It opened 78.5, and we've seen at one point it was 96% of the bets, 98% of the money to the under, which is really unique because usually if you're going to see that type of under money, it is later. But it's logical, right? This is a Patriots team that has stopped the run well when healthy. They had that stretch where they didn't allow a 60-yard runner for a long time to start the season, got banged up. Now they're back. And all of a sudden, we're seeing teams really struggle to run the football against them. That's why you're seeing this number move down. Now, I think Walker could get quite a few carries, but is he going to be able to get to that number? That's the big question mark. But to me, if you believe in the under here, that's correlated to Darnold going over his passing yards, especially if you trust the Seattle offense. And that's why I'm attacking the passing yard prop on the Darnold side versus playing an under that's already been hit a little bit here on the Walker side.
Have you been able to, where's the juice level? Where's the juice? Like if for me, Rams Seahawks was a 10, just as far as anticipatory. And frankly, no offense, Michael, but the Patriots Broncos was about a 1. This one for me, if I'm being completely honest, is Super Bowl wise. Super Bowl, I don't love anyway, just because, you know, it's just the one game. It's more of a spectacle, but we're going to get into it. I'd put it at a 3.
Yeah, I would give it like a 3 or 4 just on the overall juice of it. However, I get to be in Vegas for it. I'll be at Circa calling the game there for VSiN. So it gets a little, elevated, you know, it gets to me to like a 5.5, 6, because it means I'll be in the middle of everything. So the experience will still be there. But when you go over like the different Super Bowls, it's not that high up just because of my belief in what will happen in this game. If I thought this was going to be a barn burner close game, expectations would be raised for me. I think there is a chance where we're kind of hitting the snooze button like last year, about halfway through the second quarter. Like, all right, what do we talk about now? Whose props do we want to bet in game? Because I think we're going to have a let's just say the tail to me is a Seahawks blowout win, and that makes it a little less fun.
Well, even if you look at the rematch from 49 and you just take the Patriots and Seahawks, the star power on each team was off the charts. The Malcolm Butler interception on the one, which is going to keep Pete Carroll out of the Hall of Fame. No Hall of Fame talk with Belichick. We're not going there. But that will keep him out of the Hall of Fame. That, you know, that Super Bowl had crazy just juice as far as star power and where those teams were. These are, you know, this is a young New England team that's ahead of schedule and a Seattle team that won 10 games last year, didn't get into the postseason. Just more of a collection of its parts.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. It's like these probably aren't all-time teams. Seattle, like if they had a different quarterback, I think the juice would be a little bit bigger for like the overall idea that this could be a dynasty in Seattle with as good as this defense is and as young as they are. But the Sam Darnold of it all, like, do you think he's going to win 4 Super Bowls for Seattle? That would surprise me. I'm not going to lie. It feels like that might be a little bit of a stretch. So we'll see what happens on that front. And New England, to your point, like, I don't want to sit here and bash New England. They are way ahead of schedule. I didn't think their championship window was open this year, and they're 4.5-point dogs in the Super Bowl. They 100% could win this game. It is possible. So the fact that they're even here, I think, is a compliment toward that New England team and what they've been able to do. They're going to have a lot better football team the next 2 or 3 years because they've got Drake May on that rookie deal. They're going to be able to fill out around him, improve the offensive line, go out and get him another receiver, work on the defense. It's nothing but upside for New England. It's just a little early.
Well, how amazing is it that the Seahawks and Patriots are here? The most unlikely Super Bowl matchup in 50 years. Seattle before week one snapped 60-1. The Pats were 80-1. Now, your longest shot as far as a Super Bowl winner, most people know 99 with the Rams. They were 150-1 before the season started. But with the two of them at 60 and 80-1, respectfully, this is the most unlikely Super Bowl matchup. And by the way, Seattle was 60-1 before week one. Did you know in division, the Cardinals were 50-1 to win the Super Bowl? That is shocking.
It is pretty crazy. You could get Seattle at 9-1 to win the West. I think it was 3 or 4 games into the season. 9-1 to win the division. Not even to win the NFC, nothing else. Just to win the division. Shout out to the Circa Better $100 ticket to pay $310,000 on Seattle over the New England Patriots. Just Seattle over New England in the Super Bowl on the exact. That's a crazy number.
That's a good job, Donkey, whoever you are. Great job. If you're going to be watching Mike Somich on VSiN on Super Bowl Sunday, you better be betting with VSiN as well. We're getting ready for the big game and Big Game 60 with a big deal to match. Save $60 off our VSiN Pro annual subscription when you sign up using the promo code SHARP. Listen, it's great. The amount of information, I've been at the company since 2019, and with each year, the amount of really, really valuable information that goes into Super Bowl betting is off the charts. So sign up, go to vsin.com/subscribe. Promo code is SHARP. You're going to save $60 right now when you hear my voice. Go to vsin.com/subscribe. Don't forget the promo code SHARP. Speaking of SHARP, are you going to be wearing anything special for a little broadcast? I'll tune in just to make sure you look good.
I was thinking I would wear a flowery Hawaiian hat, you know, with a bunch of different colors on it.
Sounds like a great idea.
That's really sharp.
Can I borrow it?
You know, I thought maybe I'd go that direction. I don't know. Maybe I'll get like a Seattle Seahawks custom jacket just so I can like rip it off and throw it on the ground if this thing goes wrong.
Are you just trying to piss off Michael? Is that what's going on here?
I think I already have. Let's be honest.
We got plenty we want to do before we get out of here and not a lot of time. So let's do this before we get off the Super Bowl. Let's go to our biggest. We were asked to give our favorite memories. And like you said, it's much easier, Samo, to remember the losses. But why don't we give one memory that stands out as far as the Super Bowl? Go ahead.
Well, the losses one, I will never forget. It's this New England Patriots team that that is part of this loss. I was someone who bet Atlanta at +3.5 and rebet them at +3. They were up 28-3. I was feeling pretty good. I was popping the champagne already, Patrick. Then they went to overtime, and I'm like, well, maybe we could just lose by 3. Nope. We get a touchdown in overtime. Patriots win by 6. Mike loses all his money. That was not a fun Super Bowl. Not going to lie. I was with my parents that day. Didn't really explain what was going on, but let's just say I definitely was not handling it the best way possible in front of the fam. But the 3.5 and 3 on Atlanta was probably the most painful Super Bowl loss for me.
Sama was having a bull spell and his parents were discombobulated. What's going on? And it's memories that don't necessarily feel the best. I'll contrast yours. I'll go a positive memory. You remember 2010, New Orleans 31-17 over Indy. So this one for me was my biggest Super Bowl win, and it was pretty simple. I radically disagreed with the side. In a vacuum, Super Bowls are very interesting, Mike, because you have so much time to debate them, and oftentimes so much public money is going to go, hey, look, Peyton Manning's playing in the Super Bowl. And Peyton Manning just won a Super Bowl a couple of years ago against Chicago and sexy Rex Grossman. Well, this was New Orleans. And both Indy and New Orleans in 2009 had started the season 13-0, two tremendous teams. But going into it, Indy had been playing better. I think New Orleans, if I remember, needed an overtime game to get to the Super Bowl. So the number was 5.5, Indy and Peyton Manning. Basically, I just had it as a coin toss. So I was just like, that's a ridiculous number. At the time, I didn't have any money, so the money I bet was necessary.
There we go.
And kids, I am not advocating that type of betting. We always stress at VSiN responsible gambling. But again, I really loved the Saints in the game, and you remember the key play. It was 10-7 at the break, and Peyton came out and went onside kick. Completely flipped the game. They score on that drive. They go on to beat the Colts, that being New Orleans. That is my biggest win.
Tell me you had New Orleans money line parlayed with onside kick recovered in that game.
Yes,
that would have been a banger.
I believe it was Moorhead. I remember everything about it. It was Moorhead who had the onside kick. They scored. It was so much about Manning, but that year Drew Brees was as good as anybody. That was maybe right up there as far as Drew Brees, and he was great in the game. I don't even know if he missed a pass.
You know what's
that one stands out.
You know what's a bummer? That couldn't happen this year. You can't have an onside kick like that.
Oh, no. You'd have to say, excuse me, ref. We're going to go ahead and attempt something here.
Imagine, Vrabel comes out. They're down 10-7 in the second half. He's like, I'm going to onside kick it to start the second half. Everyone just moves off. They're like, oh, wait
McDonald's
a second.
McDonald's like, what? Oh, okay. Cool.
That is the bummer of this kickoff rule. We don't have those random onside kicks. And they do matter sometimes, like with your New Orleans Saints that year.
Thanks for the heads up over there on the other sideline. The mystery is no longer in effect. But that one, it was a good game. A lot of points. It wasn't a great game. There's just so much Manning love. I think it was 2 years before having won the Super Bowl. So I just had it a coin toss and you're looking at 5.5. You know what to do. Okay. We'll have more memories here on Sharp Money. Let's do this. Before we get into the NBA and Giannis and what's happening with him, it looks like he is going to get traded. VSiN at the Track with Mike Somich and Aaron Halterman, wherever you find your podcast, part of the VSiN network is the best. I listen every week. The Derby Trail is upon us. And Mike, you do have news on one of the big dogs.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about Ted Nauphy and the Derby Trail this morning on VSiN at the Track. You can go find it at VSiN at the Track wherever you get your YouTube videos, VSiN at the Track for both your podcast needs, Apple, Spotify, wherever you want to catch it. And we were talking about this class and that, it reminded us of the year Forte was in the Derby, where it was Forte and then the rest. And Forte scratched the week before the Derby. Mage ends up winning it 15-1, just a wide open Kentucky Derby. Well, Ted Nauphy was that horse.
Give yourself props. You picked Mage and won a lot of people a lot of money, to be fair.
It was a good day. We had Mage. We had the double into Mage. It was a fun day. Fun
All
Kentucky
right, take
Derby
it easy.
There.
I just was giving you credit. You don't have to keep going.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It was good. 15-1, man. They don't hit those every day.
No,
not in the Derby, at least. And look, this was one of those spots where Ted Nauphy is clearly right now the best horse in the division. Well, literally 5 minutes before we came on air, breaking news, Ted Nauphy, bone bruises. He is out for 60 to 90 days. He's off the Kentucky Derby Trail. He will not be running. He has been your heavy favorite in the future pools. He's still your favorite in fixed odds markets. If you want to go look, you can get a couple horses like Chief Wallaby there at 25-1, or you can get, and yes, I may have bet these already, so I'm just making sure I give you the right odds. You can get Chief Wallaby at 25-1, and you can get Canaletto at 16-1, both available on Caesars as we are recording this, if you want to get there. Ted Nauphy's still your favorite. Ted Nauphy now dead money, leading that pool. So I think right now, if you have Ted Nauphy in pools, you basically have a takeout reduction in any of these fixed odds markets that you can find. Go out, pick a couple horses that you like. You're going to get a much better price on them right now than you will even tomorrow or this weekend once this news gets officially circulated and that number gets pulled down from books.
As of January 29, would Nafi, if things continued to go the way they had been progressing, Nafi goes off at the gate as your favorite Kentucky Derby?
5-2, 3-1, somewhere in that
range.
Pretty short. Assuming nothing, no one else pops, right?
Right, but that's what I mean, but right now.
But right, like, he is the only established horse at this point. That's the other part of this. Like, Canaletto debuted last weekend for Chad Brown. Chief Wallaby debuted a couple weekends ago for Bill Mott. These are not horses that have won stakes races that are proven yet. Canaletto right now, the third pick with Ted Nafi included. Chief Wallaby, the sixth or seventh choice with Ted Nafi included. So we are still absolutely wide open. And because of that, I want to see if I can get the 3-1, 4-1 favorite in the Derby at 16-1 or 25-1, because I believe these horses are talented enough to do that.
More info, VSiN at the track, wherever you find your downloads. It's a tremendous horse racing podcast. And if you're not into horse racing because of football, now is the time to dive in, because we are on that trail to the Kentucky Derby. It is. We love horse racing here at Sharp Money. There's no surprise that Mike would be all over it. So make sure you check that out. Now, NBA-wise, it looks like, I mean, the East is wide open, but not for the Bucks. So the Bucks right now are sitting 18-27, and that means a relationship of 12-plus years, a title the first in 50 years with Giannis and Milwaukee is going to come to an end. Will it come to an end by February 5th? That is the trade deadline. It looks like it potentially could. Why? Because after next season, Giannis is a free agent. Teams are going to want to try to get him in. Milwaukee's going to want to try to get back some value in a trade and see if they can extend him, those that are trading for him. We're going to approach this a couple of different ways. One, the teams that are really interested, the Heat, the T-Wolves, the Knicks, and surprisingly, the Warriors are a pretty short, they're your second betting favorite, which I'll get to the odds here in just a bit. But it's not often you have a 31-year-old in his prime that may be moved here, Mike.
Yeah, pretty crazy. I should rephrase that. Not that shocking that we're going to move Giannis here based on everything that has transpired up in Milwaukee over the last couple of years. But the having this talent on the block is pretty crazy. Because, you know, like, we saw Luka move last year. That was just completely wild, out of left field. Giannis is not out of left field, but he is up around that talent level, and he can absolutely flip a team's chances to be able to go after a title or go after specifically the East, which is wide open. And Giannis has said he would prefer to stay in the East. And so that makes the Knicks, that makes the Heat look like likely trade partners. Now, what is the return package for him? This isn't going to be a basketball trade, right? This isn't going to be, we'll give you Giannis, you give us, you know, like Luka was a basketball trade. It was a terrible one, but it was a basketball trade where you're getting Anthony Davis back, a piece that you believe can win now. This is a Bucks team that is officially going to go into rebuild mode, officially go into tank mode. They want assets. They don't want necessarily players that they're going to try and put out on the court and win basketball games with. So that makes it a little harder to trade him to some of these teams. You're going to have to match the salaries depending on the apron levels for these teams. But it looks like he wants to go to the East. We'll see if the Bucks decide to honor that request. If he does, and it is the Heat or it is the Knicks, to me, the way you look at this is, okay, can I predict where he goes? Right now, the Knicks are plus 340 to win the East. Right now, the Heat are 14-1. Do you believe he ends up in any of those locations? You can kind of try and get ahead of it and get in the future book. That's a little risky for me, Patrick. I think the better look here is to look at the Bucks under their team win total for this year. Right now on FanDuel, you can get under 30.5 wins at minus 104. Right now, the Bucks have 18 wins. They would need to win 12 more games or 13 more games to be able to hit that total. That's around a 36% win percentage. They are 3-12 without Giannis when they are trying to win, which is around 20%. Once they trade Giannis, Patrick, they're full tank mode because they get the worst of the two picks between their own and the Pelicans. The Pelicans, the worst team in the NBA right now. So they want to try and get their own pick as low as possible so that they get as high as a draft pick as possible. That to me means this is a team that's screaming tank and that you're going to see that win rate be somewhere in the 20 to 25% range for the rest of the year, which puts them well below 30.5 wins. So I instead of taking a stab in the dark at where he goes at a bigger number, I decided to go on FanDuel and attack the under win total for Milwaukee here at 30.5.
Yeah, that's a tremendous play. And the reason being, first off, they're 15-15 with him. So obviously they're going to be better with Giannis, but it's kind of staggering. They're 15 points better per 100 possessions when he's on the floor, which is, I mean, he is literally everything to this team. You mentioned 3-12 without him. It's not just the fact that they're going to be a worse basketball team when they trade him, if they trade him. It's the fact that they definitely don't want to be. Right now, their motivation has been keep Giannis happy. Maybe we hit lightning in a bottle. We traded for Miles Turner. Guess what? It didn't work. But it's been an appeasement situation. And it is a fascinating situation where in sports where there's so much contention, like you're going to have an organization in the Bucks and Giannis working together on this symbiotically to make it like this is how wonderful the partnership has been. But your point is well taken. If you want to jump on potential, like a conference championship of who you think he's going to get traded to, a champion, adjusted win total right now, and be a, you know, foresee the future, you can get fat numbers. Like mm-hmm. Golden State is, I don't know, 120-1 to win a championship. What if Giannis ends up there? They do have a ton of first round draft picks, so they have assets that Milwaukee would want, that type of thing.
Yeah, right now you get the Warriors at 65-1 to win the West.
Crazy. So, like and it's not crazy because they have so many of their own picks is my point.
Right. So if you have Giannis and Curry, 65-1 seems like a nice price. And I understand people wanting to stab into those markets because of the upside of the price. To me, again, I'd rather just take the team total win total in Milwaukee.
No, I agree. I love it.
Because let's say Giannis doesn't get traded. It's still in the Bucks' best interest to lose. And he's already sidelined with a Fugazi injury anyway. You just keep him out longer. And you don't play him so that you get the better pick and you have Giannis next year, right? So to me, this is 6-1, half a dozen the other. There's no point in putting him back out there. And if you're not putting him back out there, then this is going to be a Bucks team that struggles on the way home.
Right there with you. Let's just quickly take a look at the conferences just for fun. The Knicks, if you want to say they've righted the ship, they just beat Sacramento. They've won three in a row, but they're plus 340 in the East. The Celtics are plus 340. So, and then your Pistons, my Pistons and your Pistons, because you liked them before. You liked, well, take it easy. But you liked them before the season. They're plus 360. There may be a trade to make for the Pistons. I don't think they're going to get rid of a Durin or a Thompson. They may just add a piece, and that may be enough in the East. Look, the Knicks were in a position after the Dallas loss where I thought they might fire the coach. So the idea that they're your co-betting favorite in the East, I do not see this ship getting righted.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of need Giannis to right the ship, right? Like that would be the move to be able to try and figure this out. I've got so much liability to this Pistons team. We talked about it on Mad Dog Sports Radio. I have them 40-1 to win the East. And so I'm now trying to figure out how to monetize that ticket. I have not bet the Knicks. I have not bet the Celtics yet. I'm kind of just waiting for the playoffs. And then I'm going to figure out how to monetize it once we get there and once we get through this trade deadline and everyone moves. Your Pistons have all the assets. They could go out and get whoever they want if they're willing to get rid of some of the younger talent as well as some of the draft picks that they still have a hoard of. So I think they're a fascinating team to watch as we move forward here. The Celtics are unbettable to me simply because I don't know enough about Jason Tatum. Like if I knew Jason Tatum was going to come back and be Jason Tatum, then that price is pretty darn good.
They've been a shockingly good surprise, though.
They have. They've been awesome on that front. And Brown has been phenomenal all year
long.
He's been
amazing.
Great for them. I can't predict the future where you're just going to have Jason Tatum back from this Achilles and it's going to be fine. And that's what you need if Boston's going to be able to win the East. So for me, that's why I kind of stay away from there. I've gotten some people giving me some 76ers love. They're sitting at 12-1. Edgecombe's been phenomenal. Maxey's great, but there's the Embiid of it all. I don't trust him to stay healthy for four playoff rounds. So if you want to take a shot, to me, the best price is still the Pistons. But I have exposure to much bigger numbers, so I'm not getting involved.
And if you want to have some fun, may I offer you a 9-1 bet?
Let's hear
it. I think you're going to like this bet. This bet would be our Pistons. They will be coming out of the East. Fair?
Fair.
So will Oklahoma City. But Oklahoma City, let's be fair, probably beat our Pistons. And that right now, exact result is 9-1. OKC over the Pistons.
Look, I don't hate it at all. Like, if
you're fun,
OKC is so much the best team still. And if Giannis doesn't...
By the way, they're $125 in the West, which shortened up to a point where it's like, it might be bettable now.
Yeah, it's anything around even money. You're close to a good number in that front. Unless, like, again, maybe you wait for the trade deadline. You see if Giannis goes to San Antonio or goes to Houston, one of the teams I actually think it would really make a difference if he ends up there. maybe Minnesota, like maybe with him and Ant, that's a new thing. But to me, like, if you want to look at the Pistons would lose to Thunder in the finals, you're dead on.
Yes.
And so it's like, let's just, I bet East. I didn't bet to win it all for a reason. So I agree with you. Like if you like the Pistons plus 360, taking the Thunder for like, if going half and half stake and you get 9-1 on Thunder over Pistons exact result, I think that's a good way to attack it.
What I really like is your Milwaukee season total as far as the adjusted wins to go under. First off, Giannis isn't going to be playing for the next 2 weeks with, I believe it's a calf. Mm-hmm. So no, that is, they're 1-6 ATS their last seven. They're 1-6 straight up their last seven. They can see obviously what's on the horizon, and it's ominous. It's a Giannis-less Milwaukee Bucks team for the first time in 12 plus years.
And just to reiterate, this is the version of them when they're trying to win, right? They're going to try and tank as we get closer to the end of the season. It's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better there in Milwaukee. So I was shocked when I saw 30.5. I was expecting something around 26.5, 25.5. So I think they're like four games too high on what that number should be.
One thing that you should know about Sharp Money is we like to bet some hockey. In the next edition, we'll tease you a little bit. We're going to walk you through exactly what you should be doing as far as NHL betting, why, as opposed to the association, you should be betting the NHL. That's to come. Quickly before we get out of here, let's go ahead, coaches and the NFL. Some surprises. I think Cleveland couldn't figure out whether to wind their watch or go to the bathroom because they ended up going Todd Monken. And then Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator, was like, I'm out. Just a disastrous hiring situation there with the Browns.
Look, when you're the Browns, you're going to go full Brown.
And they did.
They went full Browns on this coaching hire.
They certainly did.
I don't know what's the plan here. Todd Monken, like, he had Lamar Jackson, and it wasn't great. So what are we going to do now with this offense? I like, are we sure he's ready to be an NFL head coach? I realize he's been a coordinator for a long time. Like, is this really the guy you want in your role?
No, it's not.
A year and a half, Patrick.
I would go under. I think he's going to last a year. You've already got Myles Garrett, who I've warned you about. Myles Garrett could be very passive aggressive. He is doing just that on social media because his defensive coordinator, Jim Schwartz, said, I thought I was getting the job. I didn't get the job. And you hired Todd Monken? Deuces. That's what's going on in Cleveland. So that is an S show. In Buffalo, more is the same.
Worse.
They go
worse 30, than Cleveland, Patrick.
They go 36-year-old Joe Brady in-house. Because the implicit plan was this, whatever is happening here with what we've currently got isn't working. So we need to go outside and bring in some magic. Instead, they went back inside and put lipstick on the piggy as the offensive coordinator is becoming the head coach for the Bills.
This makes the press conference even more ridiculous because they said, look, Bean had nothing to do with the Coleman draft pick. That was the coaching staff, specifically the offensive coaching staff that wanted Coleman. Let's promote the offensive coordinator to head coach after that train wreck of a press conference. What are we doing?
Like, what are we doing?
This is one of those situations where it's like, hey, I get you want to move on from McDermott. What's the plan? Good organizations have plans. They don't just try and figure it out on the fly. And this was the Buffalo Bills trying to figure it out on the fly and doing an absolutely atrocious job of it while shooting themselves in the foot in the process. If I was Josh Allen, I would be so pissed.
But here's the thing. Allen was chilling in the interviews. He definitely signed off on Joe Brady. You know why? He doesn't feel like learning a new offense at 29 years old.
Yes, but like imagine if you could have, like, if you had done this, and I realize it's hard to do it earlier because they were in the play, all that jazz, but like you should have at least put whispers out to some of the candidates.
Oh, no, like, this was handled so badly. They could have said to Stefanski and Harbaugh, by the way, if this doesn't go well in Denver, we might be making a move, agent, wink, wink.
Yeah.
But they did none of that because they're idiots.
No, here's a plane ticket to come watch the game. don't make a decision till it's over, right? Like, they're like, I don't understand what this organization is doing. That press conference was absolute lunacy. The fact that you then hired the offensive coach who you threw under the bus after firing the defensive coach is crazy. Like, this is all time mishandling of a all time talent in Josh Allen up in Buffalo.
And finally, well, there's another one. Mike McCarthy isn't in Pittsburgh. And I'll say this. Mike McCarthy is a yinzer. He's from Pittsburgh. And I'll be honest with you. He said something that made me realize he was just happy to be there. But before that, the tears, the emotion. I was sold. I was hooked. Who says you can't go home? I was like, you know what? Maybe it just means more to McCarthy. And then he said something that made me realize he is indeed Mike McCarthy, and he's unserious. He'd like to win 9-10 games, and he'd like to get bounced early. He literally said, I'd love to have Aaron Rodgers back. As soon as he said that, unlike even somebody that's a disaster, Aaron Glenn with the Jets, at least Glenn said, are you kidding? We're not going to continue this stupid experiment. Think about it this way, Samo. Stafford played about as good as you can play the position all year, played great against Seattle's defense, and it still wasn't enough. Can you imagine this iteration of Aaron Rodgers doing that in a championship game? You cannot. They are unserious.
No, they're not serious.
My TED talk is over.
Well, can I bring up a couple other points? Mike McCarthy underachieved as a head coach with a very good Packers team and a very good Cowboys team. How's he going to do with a not good Steelers team? Spoiler alert, you're not winning 9 or 10 games. You're actually losing 9 or 10 games. This is going to be the losing season we've been waiting for Mike Tomlin to have forever. Secondly, how in the world do you hire someone after what happened in Dallas? Remember when he was interviewing for that Dallas job? He said he watched every play of the previous NFL season and believed wholeheartedly in analytics. And then in the introductory press conference, he said, no, I didn't even watch every play of the Cowboys last year, and I don't really think analytics are all that cool. But you just say what you need to get the job. How do you then hire that person again? Like, you know he's lying in the interviews. You can't trust him. Yes, I get the resume is great. Those are with significantly better teams than what you have in Pittsburgh. I mean, this is like going from a slightly above mediocrity to just accepting mediocrity. I was shocked McCarthy got another job, let alone beat in Pittsburgh.
He literally said during the presser, I watched a lot of the Steelers games on TV and Rodgers looked pretty good. My brain said, paging Mike McDonald, paging Sean McVay, paging Ben Johnson. You know, the people that are forward thinkers that don't care about Aaron Rodgers' feelings and are serious about winning.
Here's the problem. No one's going to want this job in a year or two. No one. There's nothing in the cupboard. So, like, you're going to have the option to go to Buffalo. You're going to have the option to go to Philadelphia. You're going to have the option to go to these teams that have pieces. Washington. Why would you go to Pittsburgh?
Dude, I don't know. And in summation, as far as the head coaches, if you'd like to go try to find a market on the Cardinals' next coach, maybe you could find a incomplete and find out the number, because nobody wants that job.
No.
It might go to Mike LaFleur, and that is Matt's brother, and he's very much not somebody that's thought of that type of way in coaching circles. It's a disaster in Arizona.
It's a mess. I don't know if I'd take the job, Patrick.
That's a
lie.
I would take the job.
I would do it. I would take the job. If you want to offer me the job, Arizona call. Cardinals, I will take that head
coach. Can you still do Monday's sharp money? Because
I'd be mailing it in. If I think that, I know what I'm there for. I'm getting the paycheck and I'm getting out of there, because I know it's not going to last very long for me, no matter what happens in Arizona, because you're not turning that franchise around quickly. The Cardinals are going to Cardinal, man. Why did you get rid of Gannon? You're not going to hire someone better than Gannon. I'm not even a big Gannon fan, but you're zero chance you hire someone who's better than him.
And then finally, the Raiders. Listen, I don't think it's a terrible job. Obviously, you have the number one overall pick. You have some pieces. You have a tremendous, like, I genuinely love the stadium with which they play. The owner gets a bad rap because he's got a donkey ass haircut, but he is a tremendous owner. He leaves you alone, and if he gets rid of you, it pays you billions to go away. And Tom Brady, like he did on the football field and the broadcast booth, is going to figure out this ownership thing. I don't think the Raiders is a terrible job at all.
No, I don't think of all the ones we've talked about. I mean, obviously the Buffalo job to me the best because you have Josh Allen. But if you're looking at the Cardinals, if you're looking at the Browns, if you're looking at the Raiders, it's Raiders like with a bullet, easily the one that you want to end up in because you've got the number one pick and you've got options on what to do with it. By the way, can we all just like pour one out for Geno Smith. Do you realize he left Seattle as their quarterback? They're going to the Super Bowl. He joined the Raiders.
It's been a tough run.
They're getting the number one pick in the NFL draft.
If you were to write a script, he would have preferred not it go this way.
You're looking for the opposite. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he just threw another pick. Let's just say he didn't love Chip Kelly's offense. He did not seem comfortable. And to be fair, Schneider, this is the first general manager who's ever built a Super Bowl roster with a coach, got rid of that coach, and by the way, got rid of Pete Carroll at 8 wins, a legend, rebuilt the whole entire roster with a new coach, and is back in the Super Bowl. Never happened before. And part of that was moving on from Geno Smith, which was a 50-50 ball amongst people that were debating it at the time, bringing in Sam Darnold.
Yeah, look, hiring Mike McDaniel and then that move to bring in Sam Darnold, it's incredible.
Franchise changing.
I didn't expect Seattle to be in this position, to be completely honest, right? When they made that move for Darnold, I love the McDaniel hire. McDonald hire. But like the Darnold move, man, it was like, hey, okay. It feels like you're kind of 6-1, half a dozen of the other with him and Geno Smith. But he's been awesome.
I think I was split on it.
Yep.
Geno, it's kind of like the Spider-Man meme. I had Geno pointing at Sam, if we're being fair. Remember, Sam was terrible against the Lions, terrible against the Rams to end the season for Minnesota. They decided to move on because they wasted a first-round draft pick on J.J. McCarthy. All right, let's get out of here. We'll have more on the Super Bowl. Just in summation, our thoughts. I don't have a problem with the 45.5 under. I don't think this total, even with public money, is going to get pushed up.
I don't think we're going to go to anything like 48, 47, right? Whereas our numbers you start caring about again, 46, not a huge key number when you're talking about totals. 45 is, that's an important one. So if you want the under, I think you can play it now. I think you can wait a little bit. I would expect we're hanging out between 45.5 and 46 until kickoff here. I do like Seattle minus a large number. So I played them 7.5 and 14.5. I think both of those are ways to get plus money on Seattle where there is a long tail where they are able to win in a blowout here. So I took a piece of both of those. Like I said, I like Darnold over passing yards as well. 229.5. I think that this is a situation where they're going to have to throw the ball to win because I respect that Patriots run defense. I think Walker has a rough day, and that means it's Darnold's arm that gets the job done.
Great job, Samo. We encourage you, if you want to bet the NHL like us and ride with us, next Sharp Money, we're going to tell you how to do it and effectively. If you want to check out the Derby Trail and everything that's happening with horse racing, there's one podcast. It's called VEASAN at the Track with Mike Somich. Remember, he's going to be on with Matt Brown, Ready, Set, Bet during the Super Bowl, but he's also going to be on coming up this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Anything special as far as programming?
Yeah, we're going to talk Shador Sanders in the Pro Bowl. Can't wait to see
awesome.
That.
Awesome. Well-deserved.
Yeah.
And then you can also check out Samich with me on Fridays and check me out Monday through Friday. That is 5 to 8 West on VEASAN Live on Mad Dog Sports Radio. A lot of nuggets, by the way, on the way out in the VEASAN newsletter leading up to the Super Bowl, and it's free. VEASAN.com/newsletter. Enter your email address. There's no obligation. Samo, last word on you.
Lose Bucks, lose. Let's go, baby.
Let's stay under, and we'll figure out where Giannis ends up. We'll see you next time. Sharp Money.